That's it. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, December 14th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Just want to make a quick announcement. The council has just adjourned from closed session where we discussed a potential legal matter, and we have no report at this time. Our next agenda item is the flag salute, and Mr. Toby Charles is here representing Troop 489 from the Boy Scouts to lead us in the flag salute. If you would remain standing, Pastor Richard Sharn is here as well to lead us in the invocation.
Let me start by apologizing that the troop's not here. We're on Christmas break, and when I made this commitment, I was not aware of that. And then the thought was the American educator and clergyman Edward Everett once said, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." And I thought that was appropriate, seeing as I have no Boy Scouts here with me tonight. So would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let's pray together. Our Father in heaven, we come before you with grateful hearts tonight in this celebration of this wonderful time of the year. The psalmist David Rife. Our prayer would be for peace in every nation, and in the United States, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, and throughout the world. At this special time of our year, may there be joy and peace in each of our hearts and lives as we put our faith and trust in you. We remember the message from long ago from angels on the hillsides of Judea. It was in the Christmas story, and joined with the multitude of the heavenly host, they said, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men." We want to celebrate the one who was given to be the Prince of Peace. And may every one of us tonight open our hearts and lives to the coming anew of your presence and grace in this joyous Christmas for all. And we bless you, we magnify you, and it is in the name of your only begotten Son, our Savior and Lord, that we pray. Amen. You may be seated, and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas to you as well. Thank you for that invocation, Pastor. That takes us to item number 5, special presentations. We have none this evening. Item number 6 is agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only.
So moved.
And all further readings be waived. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Takes us to item number 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the audience to come forward and comment or make observations on items that are not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. We would ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Any members of the audience that would like to come forward? Okay, we will close community comments. That will take us to item 8, consent agenda. Consent agenda is generally a group of items that we approve in one action or one motion. These are items that the council has had an opportunity to review in depth, and we will go ahead and approve the consent agenda unless there is a member of the audience that would like to pull an item of consent for further discussion or separate action. What is the will of the council?
Mayor, I'd like to pull item 8I, please.
Okay, 8I. Are there any others?
Same one.
Okay. I will entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8N, with the exception of 8I.
I move we accept, approve those items with the exception of 8I.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and we have a second. Anything in there to read tonight, Tim?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, that takes us back to 8I. Consider.
Second question would be, is the Land Conservancy looking at, as part of the scope, negotiating with landowners potential easements? So I guess those are my two questions.
I'll answer both questions and then point out that there is a amendment to the scope that was discussed with the Land Conservancy. The first is we did not feel that any other entity was as experienced or as qualified as the Land Conservancy in contacting the property owners and in assisting us with this scope. It was a sole source discussion with the Land Conservancy. They had already been in contact with the owners that we were interested in contacting. A second part of the question, if I can have you repeat it, and I'll move on to mention that the scope as it's currently defined mentions the city's sphere of influence, and that specifically was altered in negotiations to include all of the planning area, not just the official sphere of influence, which would just be the potential areas of annexation in addition to the city limits. The second part of your question.
Second part of the question is as part of the scope, I was wondering, as the Land Conservancy works with the potential landowners in developing and looking at the possibility of moving into a conservation easement, is it part of the scope that then they would then follow through throughout the process?
Yes. The intent was to establish criteria, prioritize the properties that the city would be most interested in, contact all of the owners with essentially a cold letter inquiring about the interest of the property owner in participating and providing some basic information, and then pursuing both the people who respond favorably and the people who are on the priority list.
Okay. Well, I guess, I'm going to articulate my concern. And again, I wholeheartedly agree that when we talk about a local Land Conservancy, probably these are the folks that probably have the most experience. My concern is that this is what they do for a living. And there are other agencies that once an individual were to decide to move forward, could actually move forward with different agencies. And I'm just concerned that we may be setting ourselves up for these folks then to contract and move forward, which will actually, we're helping then support one particular land trust over particular other agencies that might be, depending on the landowner's desires, another way to, there may be other ways to go. And so what I'd like to do is just maybe encourage staff to articulate with the Land Conservancy and educating the potential landowners as to all of the different folks that might be appropriate. As you know, our family completed a conservation easement on our agricultural property.
Conservation contracts, they wouldn't necessarily be with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo, the American Farmland Trust, or any other specific entity at this time.
Well, and a couple others I'd just like to point out. The RCD, certainly Resource Conservation District, is the current agency that holds the easement and monitors our property. We have the California Rangeland Trust, which is basically out of the North County, which probably may not be appropriate, but it's just nice to let people know what the alternatives are, and whatever's going to fit their needs the best.
I think if it would make you more comfortable, it wouldn't be inappropriate in a motion to actually request that be added into the scope of work, so we actually require them to provide, you know, even provide something in writing that they can hand out to folks with a list of all the different options.
Okay. I'll certainly make the motion after our discussion.
If I can jump in here for just a quick second, it might even be fitting in, and I don't know how awkward this would be, but under the scope of work, when we talk about procedure on, let's see, pages and number, attachment one, you talk about the cold letter. It might, I'm assuming that the purpose of that cold letter is education. Is that correct? Okay, it might be appropriate in within the text of that letter to mention some other potential agencies and leave it open that can, in fact, provide these services. I don't know if that's something that would be that appropriate, but if we're going to be sending an education message, then certainly pointing out alternatives in the form of organizations who can provide this service might be suitable. That way we're not coming across as being biased. So with that, Councilmember Dickens, would you?
Okay, one quick.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Any other discussion? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did have concern about the sphere of influence. Can you remind me what the planning area is, the rough boundaries of the planning area?
The planning area extends into the Cienega Valley, into the Arroyo Grande Valley. Generally, it's down through the agricultural area to the south. It extends beyond the sphere of influence to the east. It includes all of the Arroyo Grande fringe to the north and basically slightly overlaps Pismo and Grover Beach to the west. But it would be a substantial number of additional agricultural areas that were identified in the CASP study and in our conservation study, with the focus being those properties in the immediate vicinity of the city, including the city limits.
Okay. So is there a number of properties they're contacting, or just a general? Because, I mean, that's a lot of properties. It goes from almost no properties.
These are all of the agricultural designated properties. This would not be a letter that would be sent to all landowners in that planning area. It would focus on the agricultural designated properties within those boundaries.
Actually, okay.
I believe I did have one other comment. Okay. Robin, in the staff report,
which are under contract, in terms of the Williamson Act, the intent was to point out the size of the properties. The 10 acres, there's very few of those properties, and I took this figure from the conservation report, and I'm sorry I don't have the backup information.
Okay, I think what the report is. I think what you're trying to there's actually the only, there's only one property with the Dixon Ranch, but there's actually two properties that are covered under a conservation easement.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Just a quick clarification. With that, I'd like to make a motion to approve consent agenda item 8I with the amendment to add the language to include within our educational scope of work a list of other like agencies that can also assist landowners in pursuing conservation easements.
Okay. That includes the cold letter?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item number 9, public hearings. We have several this evening. The first is consideration of preliminary approval of community development block grants for 2005. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Sorry about that, Mr. Mayor. We're going to get our PowerPoint online. Good evening, council members, as well as the mayor. Uh, I have a blank screen here. Sorry about the wait.
It's all right.
Tonight, the council has the opportunity to make preliminary recommendations for the 2005 CDBG grant funds. And also, the staff is requesting that the City Council approve reallocation of 2002 funds for the construction of handicap curb cuts around Nelson Green, specifically on the corner of Short Street in Nelson and Mason Street in Nelson. The use of CDBG funds can be made for a variety of projects as long as they meet one of the national objectives. These are benefit low and moderate income persons, aid in the prevention of and or elimination of slums or blight, or addresses an urgent community need. Where staff suggests funding at the same level as last year, actually a $48 increase to each one. There was two groups that were not didn't apply last year, were not funded, but this year, due to a couple of people dropping out, we suggest that they be funded for their full amounts, their very small amounts, $1,000 and $1,500. Under public facilities, staff suggests EOC, Arroyo Grande Clinic, would like to renovate three client rooms. They also asked for money under public services, but again, since that's so competitive, staff had upped the suggestion for the funds under the public facilities. And also a city project to, again, improve the Strother and Elm Street Park ADA improvements. Under economic development, staff recommends funds go to the Small Business Development Center. Last year, they're awarded $3,000. This year, staff suggests $6,000. Staff has been working with the Small Business Development Center not only to go around to businesses and introduce the city and SBDC and their services, but also in certain focused economic development projects that staff would like to look into and definitely would need some economic development help in those areas. Under a citywide area benefit, which is limited to 30% of the total funds, staff would suggest facade grants of $15,000. This would fund three facade grants, and also code enforcement just above the levels of last year. And also full money for administration of these grants. It does take a lot of time and effort for city staff to make sure that each subrecipient is doing what's required of the contract. And also under administration and planning is the hotline in San Luis Obispo is trying to build a 211 system where if people are in need of social services, they're able to dial this one number and connect to them. And this is an early planning stage. That's $1,000. The upcoming process for this will, after your recommendations tonight, will be a second needs assessment workshop that, again, will hold in conjunction with the City of Grover Beach. And then staff will return to you for final approval in March or April of 2005. So tonight it's recommended that the City Council provide preliminary approval for the funds for the 2005 CDBG year, and also adopt a resolution approving the amendment to the consolidated plan of 2002 so that funds can go and do the repairs to the curb cuts at Nelson Green. That concludes my staff report, and I'm here to answer any questions for you.
Okay. I just wanted to make a general observation for the benefit of the audience. This process of distributing CDBG grants, as Council Member Costello and Councilmember Dickens will attest to, used to take hours. And our charge to staff over the past several years has been, the past couple of years, has been to try as best we can to distribute.
Remodel that they're planning, or is this part of a number of contributions they're putting together to do that?
For EOC, for the clinic, we're trying to work together with the city of Grover Beach as well as the county to get the funds to them. Certainly because of the public services cap, I think the city's role here would be funding half of the cost for the repairs that could be under public facilities for that that facility.
Okay, so the $8,100 is half of the total repair.
Exactly.
Okay.
Jim, why not Pismo Beach in regard to that particular item as well?
I believe I didn't see an application through Pismo Beach for this. It seems like it's Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and the county. The location of the facility is located pretty close to the border of Grover Beach. Of course, it's in Arroyo Grande, so maybe they figured most of the clientele comes from those two cities.
Was that a call from the EOC pretty much determines that?
Exactly.
Okay.
I can certainly, since this is preliminary, I can go back and ask any questions that you want me to and get you more information.
Well, my only comment would be that working at the high school, we have students from all three jurisdictions and, of course, the county. And because of its location, we probably have students from the high school accessing this teen clinic, which is what it's designed for, and that's why it's located in the place it's at. It's not because it's in Pismo, but we do have students, of course, from Pismo who attend AG High School. So just something to think about.
Any other questions, clarification on the staff report?
Quick question. Jim, I noticed that in all of the different applications we had, I didn't see Pismo Beach listed as a jurisdiction that was requested any funds at all. Do they participate in this?
Actually, you did jog my memory that they don't participate in the countywide level of disbursement of these funds through the county. Thank you for reminding me of that, sir.
Do they participate at all? I mean, do they have any funds that they allocate and they just do it a different way? Or
I believe they have to apply through the state, and then they're competing against all the applications for the state. And part of, I guess, the reason why Arroyo Grande got into this was we can compete for these funds through the county level and divide it up that way.
Thank you.
Any others?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor. Steve, I had a question in regards to the code enforcement dollars. As you know, we've reorganized code enforcement this last year, and is doing so, there could appear to be possibly a cost savings to the city in regards to the overall code enforcement, because we've allocated those responsibilities throughout different departments and so forth. So I was kind of looking at your feedback in regards to whether that there is a cost savings there and what the possibility is of moving some of those dollars up into the facade improvement grants, because I know we have a lot of requests. I believe we have a lot of requests for those, and just some feedback.
Thank you. Good question. Well, there's definitely a cost savings from the changes we've made to code enforcement. And I think, potentially you could move some of that money from one from that service to another project. I mean, that would basically, the impact of that is you would reduce the amount of savings that we had developed in the change it for the next year. I'm not sure that we would exceed it. Yeah, Jim's been doing a great job of getting applications in. And so we haven't had a lot of money left at the end, but we haven't been running out of money either. So we've been doing pretty good budgeting at where we think we should be.
So maybe I'm unclear with the facade grants. Then I was under the impression that those are typically a $5,000 allocation. So when I was looking at that, I was thinking, well, gosh, this would only look at maybe three applications. But maybe that's not true across the board.
Yeah, we make the offer up to $5,000, and some of them have been absolutely right to that limit of $5,000, but others have been a little bit more modest and was able to bump them up to the next step and not use up the entire $5,000 for one project.
Okay. Thank you.
You'll notice in a later report this evening, too, in redevelopment, probably not this year, but in the future, next few years, we hope to shift some of this to the redevelopment program, that source of funding may be able to start supplementing the block grant as far as facade improvements. And that funding may give us a little more flexibility in terms of what they can use with the grants, with the grants also.
Any other comments, clarifications, questions? Okay, if not, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Please try and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Anyone?
My name is Steve Fair.
Steve, if you come up to the podium, if you would, please.
My name's Steve Thayer, and I'm the new executive director for Big Brothers Big Sisters. And I just wanted to come and thank the city for your support through CDBG funds and appreciate it. And I wanted to tell you that we're also going to be involved more in the South County. We got a federal grant to do some work with the Boys and Girls Clubs, both in North County and South County. And one of our problem areas is South County in terms of having a waiting list with kids. We're trying to get more and more bigs, and that's going to become more high profile in terms of our work within the city of Arroyo Grande. So just wanted to introduce myself and thank you once again for your support of us.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here tonight. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Kayla Wilburn with EOC Health Services, and I wanted to thank you for your continued support of all of our programs in the South County tonight, specifically for the 40 Wonderful program that provides free clinical services to menopausal and perimenopausal women, free breast exams and mammograms. Also, our senior health screening program that provides preventive services to seniors in the South County at 5 different sites. We go to them because they can't always get to a clinic to get their basic needs met. And our Arroyo Grande Clinic, which we are very close to finishing the renovation, and the funds that you're discussing tonight will help us do that. So thank you again for your continued support.
Thanks for being here. Anyone else?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm Wanda McFarlane with Caring Callers, and I do just want to thank.
We try to serve as many learners as possible all the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close the public comment portion and bring this back to the council. Councilmember Costello, why don't you start this one off?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's always a little difficult for me to go through this process because there's so many deserving agencies that come to us looking for assistance. And it always kind of gripes me a little bit that we can only provide 15% of the fund to support their requests. I'd like to commend staff on the work they've done working with the groups and the workshop to get this far to us. I can't see making any changes in the work that you've done and the recommendations you've made. I only regret that we can't make them larger grants than what we do. So thank you for your work, and I have no problem supporting this as it's been provided to us tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Good, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I too don't have any trouble supporting the staff request as it's been presented. Certainly first time I've been through this, and it's a lot of paperwork to review here, and I would echo that there are certainly a lot of deserving and I'm going to say underfunded here based on the requests and the money that's available. But I can support staff's recommendation as they're presented.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold?
Yeah, I also have no problem with the request as presented. I would like to thank staff again also for all the hard work. It was very informative looking through all the information that was presented. And I, too, have to say that it's unfortunate that we aren't able to fund everybody at the full amount, but I'm glad that we were able to help as many people as we were.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to make a couple suggestions in regards to the proposed dollar amounts. In the public service category, I guess, and I know these are all worthy organizations. And I don't quite understand staff's rationale for funding 100% of the newcomers, besides the fact that they are small requests. What I would like to see is the other folks, when we're talking about increasing the allocations to those that we've been giving in the past at $48 each, and I think that just from an equity standpoint, I'd like to, I'm not talking about reducing them significantly, but it's hard for me to fund one agency 100% and not 100% to the others. So just from an equity standpoint, I don't know what those dollar amounts would be, but I think that we need to be a little more equitable there. And then in regards to the, as I mentioned earlier, the code enforcement and the facade grants, I know that our budget was based on basically the last year's allocations of approximately $12,000. So I guess my recommendation would be to make that maybe round it up to 13 and put the rest into facade grants, because I think that's a real worthy opportunity that we have with our economic development and
opportunity to shift grant monies down the line.
Well, two things. One, this evening you're not approving anything. You're giving us direction for what we will come back for the formal approval stage, which I think is in next month. Is next month?
It's March or April.
Oh, March or April. Okay. So there'll be quite a bit of time before you're actually asked to formally approve the numbers. Once those numbers are formally approved, though, we have an option later on to change those. It's a little more cumbersome. We have to get county approval, and we bring it back. Actually, that's what we're doing here this evening on the second item with the curb cuts. We're taking money from last year that was for some other ADA improvements. A new need has come up, and so we're asking that to be redirected. So, yeah, there's a process there to do that.
And in terms of the 2004 allocation as it relates to facade improvement, what is the status of that 2004 allocation? Is it gone? Is there some left?
My memory is there is $25,000 total. I think we're going to be pretty close to starting to spend that money. We're just about done with 2003. I working with business owners who want to do this, and it takes a little bit of time for them to come in with the application and make the final decision. I think that by the end of the year, we'll use up that $25,000. It seems that the applications are slowing down, although we are asking that instead of just being in the village or in the area between Elm and Halcyon, it's extended to the entire RDA area. That may increase, give other people opportunities to get involved with it. So it's almost a projection where we think we'll be okay, but there's a possibility that we could need some more.
Okay, and since you indicate that some of the grant applications are for less than $5,000, in other words, it's conceivable that if we were to consider Councilmember Dickens' recommendation to redistribute $2,000 to the facade grant program from code enforcement, theoretically, we could get two requests for $1,000 and handle two additional businesses.
Very possible, or one business maybe at $2,000.
If we were to do that, would there be a significant impact in service level for code enforcement?
No, I think it's just a decrease in revenue to the general fund. That's what the changes to the code enforcement program were designed to generate savings within the general fund, but that would be a fairly minor impact to that. And I do not have a problem with that if you'd like to recommend that from a staff standpoint.
Well, I can support that portion of Councilmember Dickens' recommendations. I would not support a reduction of any of the others. I think the distribution that you have here on this matrix is fair and equitable, but I would support the shift between under area benefit, shifting, rounding out code enforcement to 13,000 and moving the other 2,000 up to code enforcement or facade improvement.
So we actually end up with $17,630 for facade grant, $13,000, and increasing the facade grant to $17,630 and going forward with that recommendation to staff.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. We have a resolution. Did we get that?
Yeah, I wanted to clarify that was sort of a blend of the resolution in addition to the preliminary allocations. That's how staff interpreted it. Okay, so
I amend it.
Took both at the same time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That takes us to 9B, consideration of an appeal of conditional use permit, case number 04006. Be a payroll adjustment, Jim.
I'll destroy the evidence, Mr. Mayor.
I'd like to note that the chair rocked when I sat in it also, so I think
okay.
It might have been
you started
a faulty chair.
Split.
Thanks. Here's the distribution. Mayor, members of the council, as the staff report attempts to note, this item is consideration of an appeal of conditional use permit case number 04006. The use permit was a part of a package that was presented to the landowners and the tenant at the northeast corner of Cortland and Grand, known as Gill's Market. This is a non-conforming existing service station established in 1969. The proposal was from the city to the property owner to provide a 5-foot landscape access control pedestrian easement behind the sidewalk, which is currently private property. Along East Grand frontage to enable the elimination of an existing driveway and the construction of a low screen wall and landscaping in front of the screen wall behind the sidewalk. It was discussed also that the conditional use permit application fee, which is normally paid by the applicant, would be waived, that we would pursue a facade enhancement grant to assist with some of the exterior modifications to the service station, including the removal of an existing canister sign on the front of the building about a year ago, that the elimination of the driveway, the construction of the wall, and anticipating landscape installation with city crews, approximately $15,000. That cost has been escalated in terms of both design and extent of prevailing wage requirements. There was no specific provision for current undergrounding of utilities other than installation of conduit within the 5-foot easement that would enable the undergrounding, which is currently under design and proposed to be implemented within 5 years as a part of an underground utility district. It was discussed with the property owner and tenant that at the time of the undergrounding, the service connection cost would have to be borne by the owner or tenant. The single largest improvement that the conditional use permit proposes, other than the exterior alterations and facade enhancement, is a new 30 by 35 metal canopy roof over the existing concrete slab and pump island, which is detached from the main structure but set back in accordance with the development standards of service stations. There are other improvements that are proposed, store walkway, a rear trash enclosure, exterior painting, removal of outdoor vending and accessory storage. As I stated before, the facade enhancement would assist only the canvas awning and signage replacement. The fly in the ointment, if I could call it that, is the Planning Commission approved the conditional use permit, but were reluctant to waive the undergrounding or not impose the in-lieu fee that has been recently established. There was no specific discussion with the Planning Commission of a new amendment which would have enabled them to waive it if they determined it to be entirely infeasible to install undergrounding at this time. Staff believes that the undergrounding requirement deserves refinement and reconsideration. There were two specific instances that staff felt might be appropriate for policy refinement to grant the Planning Commission or the Public Works and Planning Director more specific direction in the application of undergrounding requirements. Those two were small-scale improvements of existing structures where the cost of undergrounding or in-lieu fee is estimated to exceed 50% of the proposed project cost, exclusive of undergrounding, and two, city-initiated economic development and streetscape enhancement projects, which are authorized by the City Council, that would apply to this particular proposal. There are two other suggested situations which might be appropriate to be underground waivers. If the project will not result in the addition of floor area to the building, or if the project will cost less than $100,000.
To an existing building, the intent was for them to cover new construction, significant construction, either additions or new structures or new projects. We're concerned that not just with this case, but if we put these requirements on minor improvements to existing buildings, it's really going to serve as a disincentive for residents and business owners to improve their properties and maintain their properties. So that's one of the issues that we're concerned about. And that's why the key this evening is that we're asking a decision on is this particular appeal. But we'd also like direction on some changes that we've mentioned here, options to come back to you and make some additional amendments to the ordinance that we recently put in place.
I just want to make maybe a short statement since I was the one who appealed this. I wanted to sort of bring the council's focus to that intersection in particular. Cortland and Grand, as you well know, is our gateway sector segment on Grand Avenue. And recognizing that we have new development now on two corners, shortly we'll have a new development project on a third corner. This particular location is that fourth corner, and certainly without the facade improvement, without this project being feasible and moving ahead, that one corner of our gateway segment is going to be, conspicuous. And so what we're attempting to do here is a temporary fix, and it's a recognition that at some point in the future that there could be a major redevelopment project to the Spencer Center, but that's certainly not in the immediate future. And so during this interim period, what we're looking at is essentially trying to do the best we can with that fourth corner so that that particular segment of Grand Avenue truly does make the statement that we want to make. And so I just wanted to provide the council with my rationale for bringing it here. Again, this is a temporary fix, and It's the best we can do with the resources at hand at the moment. So that was the purpose for my appeal. With that, are there questions or clarifications on the staff report? Councilmember Arnold.
On the second page of the report, it mentions that the conduit will be placed within the new easement. Is that proposed during this enhancement, or it is? Because I know we had discussion about that, and then I wasn't real sure on how this was, because it said, and a service connection completed by the owner or tenant when underground occurs. So I wasn't. So would he be tying in a conduit now also to the main conduit to his property, so he wouldn't have to tear up his property later?
No, this would be basically kept at both ends of the 100-foot frontage saw cut where the landscape island is proposed across the entire frontage. There would be no connection to utilities, no wires within the conduits, no convert to be a part of the private improvements that would need to be made along with the canopy construction and the related minor exterior improvements.
And then this memo that we got, was I understanding correctly then, the four bulleted items, the first two are items that you're proposing that are basically new, and the second two actually are existing, that we could have used those?
None of those four exist. We were simply seeking direction from the council for a future proposal for amending the underground utility portion of the code. Currently, it allows waiver only if it is entirely infeasible, as determined by the commission, or if the planning director and the public works director find it infeasible for technical reasons. These would give us other criteria that would enable either administrative or commission waivers.
That's all. Thank you.
Any other clarifications in the staff report?
Yeah, just one on the development of the 23, because we had some discussion of this at Planning Commission as well, the $23,000 cost for undergrounding. Is that based on the entire frontage of the property? So basically the front of the property is 95 feet or something? Because the actual undergrounding distance that's directly the between the two poles that actually sit in front of the property is more like 30 feet.
True. Current in-lieu fee is $200-some-odd per lineal foot across the property frontage. So the cheapest alternative, we have no estimate of what it would take to underground physically because it hasn't been designed. It could be far in excess of the $23,000. Okay, so this was just assuming that either the applicant or the city would need to pay the in-lieu fee. And if that were the case, it would add $23,000 to the project that was not anticipated.
I understand. I mean, that was what we were trying to avoid, at least at the Planning Commission level, when we suggested this, was that you had a project that could afford to underground, but there was all the additional costs of undergrounding at that point that they couldn't accomplish, either forcing other people to underground their facilities or having to underground down the road 200 or 300 feet in order to hit the next pole. So I do understand that. I just was wondering exactly how we came to $23,000. The second question I have is going forward, once we've accomplished some of the undergrounding with whatever funds are available in the district funds and whatever other funds we ultimately use for this, what happens going forward with the next project that now doesn't have to underground because it was accomplished by the district and by the city? Is there some point at which they will make a contribution, or is once the undergrounding has been accomplished, then that's, at least on that street segment, that's going to be the end of the opportunity to ever collect any funds into the district?
That's the way it currently works within the regulations.
And is it doable that there would be some future? I don't know how it would be, but it's just when we're looking at this going forward. My concern is that we're going to end up creating all these exemptions. There's actually never going to be any funding for this district.
Something we could research. I'd need our attorney to look at that and see.
25 for the street improvement and 5,000 for through the facade improvement program.
That is correct. 31,000 if you include the waiver of the use permit fee.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions, clarifications? Okay. Hearing none, this is a public hearing. Anyone who would like to come forward and comment on 9B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Seeing no one, close public comment, bring this back. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one?
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, think we need to look at this the consideration of the appeal of the conditional use permit that we're looking at tonight. That's one subject area, and then we have to look at the bigger picture and in regards to our undergrounding policies and our new in-lieu fees. So, first of all, I'd like to just make a statement that I think it's important that when we look at in working with a particular property owner in doing a redevelopment project, we're not talking about a significant remodel and new construction, I think it's important that we make sure that the project is feasible. So I think this was an appropriate appeal to bring back and to look at and to evaluate how it fits into our current ordinance. So I'm certainly supportive of waiving the undergrounding requirements at this particular time and so forth. In regards to the items that staff has brought forth in helping to clarify the undergrounding and the in-lieu fees, I like having the flexibility that's been provided. I like the four statements that are made. I think that it gives us that opportunity to look at this. I certainly want to not water down the policy that we're trying to citywide, when and if at all possible, to address particular issues for our overhead utilities and visual blight that causes. And I think we've been successful in certain areas, but we need to continue to concentrate those efforts, but we shouldn't impose some undue cost on particular projects that would really render them infeasible. So I think that as far as what staff is looking for is one that support for this item this evening. I think that we need to waive those costs, and I think that we do need to have this item brought back to us. And specifically when we're talking about city-initiated economic development and streetscape enhancements projects, those are areas that we need that have been things that we've initiated, we've brought forth, and as part of that, we need to really work with the property owners and not make these things infeasible. So those are my comments.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Yeah, the reason we insisted that they be underground was because we did feel that this was the appropriate body here at the city council level to make the decision. I don't have a problem in this and fourth option. I think those are very obvious ones. So I have no problem approving the project tonight or, I guess, approving the appeal. And I also recommend that this would come back to us at a later date for approval. That's all.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, have no problem upholding the appeal in this case and not charging the in-lieu fee and not forcing the underground to go forward. In terms of the other suggested alternative solutions, I'd ask staff to look at these a little bit more closely. I think that we should have clear guidance that there are going to be cases where it's not in our own best interest as a city force the undergrounding to go forward. Whether that's a project that costs less than $100,000 or $75,000, I'm not sure, particularly if we take a look at what the in-lieu fees might be. If the in-lieu fees are, say, $10,000 on a $100,000 project, that might not be out of line. So I'm not exactly certain of the language I'd like to see coming back from staff, but I would like staff to look at this carefully. Certainly, taking the list of the four alternatives that's before us now, that's a starting point, and I look forward to discussing this in a little bit more detail when it comes back to us at a later time. But I do support the upholding the appeal of the Planning Commission's approval tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Do think that's a good point. We would probably appreciate a little flexibility and maybe going back and studying these and being able to modify them a little more. We threw these together fairly quickly. I want to credit Councilmember Guthrie, who came forward with a number of questions that really kind of highlighted some of the problems with the other criteria we had. And so we kind of worked out some others. But if we have a little more time, we may be able to refine this a little more also.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Well, I, too, don't have any trouble with upholding the appeal and waiving the fees at this level. I do think it was, given that it was a brand-new policy, that we then put Planning Commission in the position where they were going to rewrite the policy right there. I still have some trouble with the whole – the cost of undergrounding will exceed 50% of the proposed project. Any time that undergrounding reached 50% of the whole project, whether it was $101,000 or $28,000, I think we would have the economic concern that it would be unreasonable to expect that we would once and a half the cost of a project. So I still have trouble with it with 50%. That if you know even if it you know 10% seems like the most you could ever reasonably expect that a project would carry. Which I mean you know 100-foot property then would be. It'd be a $200,000 improvement. So I think we're dealing with two things. One is establishing a threshold where we're really going to require undergrounding at all. And I think that's mostly what staff has gone towards here, which is that the project would cost less than $100,000. So it'd have to be a project that was more than $100,000 before we would discuss undergrounding at all. The purpose of the in-lieu fee, just kind of repeat this, was to provide an alternative to undergrounding, not to decide whether it was the time to underground or not. I would actually like to see a couple of other things explored. One would be looking at, as I mentioned, going forward, can we collect after the fact? I really don't think we can, but I'd just like to know that for sure. The second thing would be is can we collect this in smaller amounts?
Clearly, this is something that I would like to see happen. And I can wait for the language to come back that will ultimately, I suspect, alter the municipal code section that deals with this. This continues to be a difficult issue to manage, and I spoke with someone today, although not in this city, that had recently built a project in one of our adjacent cities, and it was a mixed-use live-work project that originally was to be moved out towards the sidewalk or the street. And if we look at Grand Avenue, I think the whole notion of creating pedestrian-friendly development along Grand Avenue is something that we've stated as our goal. But in order to do that, restrictions were placed on that project that required undergrounding of utilities, of overhead utilities. And if I recall, I believe just the engineering, the quote that he got from PG&E was something like $50,000 to $80,000 just for the engineering. So these things are becoming tremendously expensive to do, and I'm not sure what the answer is. Perhaps some form of incremental relief, as Councilmember Guthrie indicated. But it is becoming a challenge, and I can, you know, I can understand the direction that the city took in trying to remove the overhead utilities for all the reasons that we've stated previously. So it'll be interesting to see what you come back with in the form of language. I think the four bullets that you have, Jim, in this this memorandum that you just passed out, I think is maybe a good start. And we'll go from there and see where it takes us. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move the resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande upholding the appeal of Planning Commission approval of conditional use permit case number 04-006, located at 1490 East Grand Avenue, applied for, Suthiv Singhal.
That's close enough.
Second.
Tim knows what you mean. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please. I'm sorry?
As a matter of clarification, that would be deleting condition of approval number 16 in the resolution itself, which requires the undergrounding.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And I'm assuming that that's okay with the motion maker. Did we get a second on that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, now, roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to 9C. Consideration of Redevelopment Agency, 5-year implementation plan, 10-year affordable housing compliance plan.
That will generate additional tax increment revenue rather than ongoing services and programs. You may recall in 2001, the City Council approved a plan proposed by the staff to address concerns on ongoing operating deficits that the agency had been experiencing. We're happy to report that by the end of this fiscal year, it's estimated that the Redevelopment Agency's annual revenues will exceed expenditures for the first time. And so as a result, the agency will begin to be able to repay internal debt, generate additional revenues for redevelopment projects, and ultimately be able to issue certificates of participation to assist with redevelopment efforts. The proposed plan consists primarily of a list of private development projects which are either underway or have been identified in concept and discussed with property owners, along with potential streetscape projects and a facade improvement program. It's important to note that the intent of this plan is only to serve as a list of potential projects. It does not in any way commit the City Council or Redevelopment Agency to any project approvals or funding. Approval of the plan by the council only communicates your support for the concepts identified within the plan. And it is understood that additional issues and considerations will be identified when the specifics of the project concepts are developed. It's also understood that project priorities and concepts will change throughout the course of the plan. The plan does include financial projections, and however, these projections are based upon each of the projects identified within the plan moving forward within the estimated time frames, which is unlikely, and therefore it's probable that the financial projections will need to be adjusted in the future. However, they do clearly indicate that the agency will be able to begin repaying its internal debt and will have additional tax increment revenues available in the future for redevelopment projects. The financial forecast table that is provided in the plan, which I show here in the presentation, it includes a projection that by fiscal year 06-07, it is possible that the agency could be in a position to issue up to $1.4 million in debt to be used for redevelopment efforts. The law also requires the plan to include a 10-year affordable housing compliance plan, which is provided to ensure that the redevelopment agency will be able to meet its affordable housing requirements. The agency is required to have 15% of all housing constructed within the redevelopment area restricted for affordable housing, and 40% of that amount is required to be restricted for very low income. We do believe that the agency will be able to meet those requirements based on our existing efforts, that the agency will be able to meet its minimum required needs. It doesn't mean that our efforts will not be able to exceed those minimum requirements and actually be able to accomplish the RENA goals. And so the plan should not be considered inconsistent with the RENA process or the housing element. There's also other differences between the two. For example, they have different time periods, and the it's also important to note that the redevelopment law deals with actual units constructed. So it's a requirement based on the actual units constructed within the redevelopment area, whereas the RENA process deals with requirements on the city to be able to zone to accommodate housing that will meet the RENA gold numbers. So they have different time frames and also different goals, but we don't believe any of the numbers or contents of these plans are inconsistent with each other. Some of the redevelopment project priorities identified in the plan include these projects. I'll go through one by one. First is mixed-use projects. The first at the Tri-W or Cookie Crock Center, which is at the southwest corner of Elm and East Grand Avenue. Once again, a potential mixed-use project on the northwest corner of East Grand and Briscoe. A mixed-use project at the vacant lots at the southwest corner of East Grand and Cortland. And then in addition to these mixed-use projects, which would include retail, office, and some housing, including affordable housing, some additional priority affordable housing, potential affordable housing sites include some properties that we've identified on Briscoe Road and the People's Self-Help El Camino Real property currently owned by that organization. So that completes a very brief summary of the plan and its contents. The much of the plan document was actually prepared by the Redevelopment Agency's consultants, RSG, and Fernando Casares, who did a lot of the work, is here this evening. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions that you have regarding the content of the plan and the data. And Fernando's here if you have any questions about the plan requirements or the plan document itself.
Thank you. Are there questions, clarifications in the staff report? Okay, seeing none.
I do have one question. Steve, I think I may have mentioned this earlier today when we spoke on the telephone. If we look in the five-year implementation plan, attachment one on page 16. Talks about blighting conditions that are present in the project area. Can we revise that to eliminate point one? Page 16.
Do you have a question too?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
On page 20, the estimated tax increment value, how are those numbers determined? Some of them seemed a little low to me based on what construction costs are today.
Rob, do you want to? Well, first of all, we need to admit they're very rough estimates that were put together fairly quickly. I mean, they're based on estimated square footages, and then also the type of the use would dictate the per square footage value. And so we just had to come up with some estimates.
And I certainly agree that these are extremely conservative. The building department also uses very conservative numbers in estimating the value for construction purposes. I don't have any further explanation of specific projects other than this is a first cut of the project cost estimates based upon conceptual design. There's no need to get too sophisticated with construction estimates when you don't really have a project proposed.
Well, in some of these, they were actually projects that were built, and this isn't going to affect what the actual number is. This is just an estimate for planning purposes. The actual number will be determined by the assessor. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I think that
was what I had in hand.
Any other questions?
Is the gentleman from, you know, I had that question specifically on whether the proportions between senior housing and whether that was based on revenue or units. I don't know if you have an answer to that or if he needs to come up and give
us. Yeah, well, I talked to him. He gave me the answer, so I have it. But it would be a good opportunity for Dan to
Fernando, come. Maybe you could, if you want to join the staff at the table, you can do that or the podium, your choice. Okay.
The question, Fernando, was clarifying that there was, within the requirements, the senior portion of the units that are constructed have to mirror the community as far as a number of seniors, but we wanted to confirm that that was based on not actual units, but based on the expenditures of the agency.
Correct. The law requires that you spend your low and moderate income funds, set aside funds, in proportion to your senior population and also in proportion to your income category. So you look at your since the 2000 senior population, and you basically, based on the 10-year projections of your housing funds, you can only spend that percentage of the funds towards the construction of senior housing units. Now, the Cortland Grand Affordable Housing Senior Project, we will produce 107 units for senior citizens, but the amount you're actually spending, it's much lower than the amount you're allowed to spend because of the population. And the RENA also provides, the RENA numbers also provides the amount, the minimum that you're required to spend on very low housing, and these are also expenditures, and also amounts, and also tells you the amount you're required to spend.
I don't believe has any similar restrictions on it, so it's only the redevelopment money we have to be concerned about.
Any other questions, clarifications? Okay. Hearing none, this is a public hearing. Any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9C, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. Seeing no one, close public comment, bring this back to council. And Councilmember Guthrie, why don't you start us off here?
I do think this is I realize it's a state requirement, but it's also a good process for us to go through, and I think probably on our first meeting, probably pretty appropriate, because there are certainly a lot of opportunities here, and the looking forward, the way that this redevelopment agency is developing has a lot of potential. I did have my one question answered. I do share some of Ed's concerns here about some of these estimates, particularly when you compare some of them to others, but I realize that's what they are. I didn't realize that these were estimates of buildings that had already been built, and now I realize that they are, even though they're built, they have not been reassessed yet, or at least have not hit the district yet. I found the report to be very useful for planning this going forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I think this is a fine document. I think that it's appropriate that we look at our five-year implementation plan and continually look back at it and address our needs. When I started this process of sitting on City Council, redevelopment was one of those things that I had no former experience on, and it was always odd to me that this is one of those things where you're actually supposed to go out and incur debt. And so that's a different concept as to how this agency works. And I'm really pleased to hear that we're going to be looking at being able to start moving in a positive direction and looking at, in the future, probably in the near future, being able to maybe even issue some certificates of participation, which is really what this process is going to be very helpful in doing. So I think staff has done a great job. Fernando, thank you very much for your help. And I think that we have the tools to within these documents to continue to move forward with what we already started.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to echo my appreciation to staff and to our consultant. Job well done. It's an excellent document that's going to give us some real opportunities in the future. If we're able to accomplish in the next 5 years several of the possibilities that we're shown tonight, I think we'll be in an excellent position. And I look forward to seeing some of them come forward and hope that we go forward. I'm also happy that we're getting ready to start to hit the positive side of this, the plus side. That's going to be nice, and we'll get to issue those certificates soon and keep moving forward. So thank you, and I can support this.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also would like to say that this has been an excellent document. I found it very useful, and I learned a lot today. I would also say that it is encouraging to see that our cash flow has turned positive and that it looks like the actual redevelopment agency might actually be able to add real value to the city. So thank you. Great job.
I have one request, I guess, and I'm not so sure that it needs to come back to us, Steve, but I think I'm trying to think. I think Councilmember Costello brought it up on page 16 of the five-year plan, where there are conditions listed 1 through 9. I guess I would ask that perhaps we take another look at that, and I understand that some of that language perhaps needs to be in there for justification purposes, but to the extent that we can run through that one last time, take a good look at conditions as they exist within our redevelopment area, and if we need to fine-tune or make some slight modifications there, and I guess I'm looking down that list, and I'm looking at the redevelopment area, and I'm not saying that to some extent these conditions don't exist, but perhaps there may be one or two that is a bit of a reach. So to the extent that we can take another look and make sure that what we have here is accurate. So if you need to make some slight adjustments to this plan, I don't have a problem with letting that rest with staff. So that would be my only request, is that we take another look at that list.
I'll work with Fernando and see if we can adjust that just a little bit more. Some of these, as you said, the redevelopment area is required to demonstrate blight, so that's a key to the redevelopment area. So some of these things we have to have in there. But, for example, Councilmember Costello made a good point. I don't think we want to be stating that we have unhealthy or unsafe situations, which we don't. And we'll go through this, and maybe there's some other wording in there that we might modify just a little bit to make sure it's consistent with key aspects of our specific area.
Well, for the record, I had tagged 5, 7, 8, and 9 that we might want to take another look at. Beyond that, I want to take this opportunity, Steve, to congratulate you on personally on the effort that you have put forth with our redevelopment agency. Not too many folks know, but before Steve got here, our redevelopment agency was spiraling rapidly downhill. It was moving in the wrong direction. Since you've been here, Steve, and I know others have contributed to the success of the direction that we're moving in now, but I think largely it was your efforts that got us back on track, and I am very grateful for what you've done to finally make our redevelopment agency viable. And I think once we begin to leverage the money that we realize through tax increment, we're going to start to see some rapid improvement in our redevelopment area. It's going to be a nice thing to watch, and so I'm very appreciative of the effort that you put forth. Okay, with that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move a resolution of the Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency adopting a five-year implementation plan for the Arroyo Grande project area and a 10-year affordable housing compliance plan.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
And Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to our last public hearing, 9D.
issue stands.
Consideration of an interim emergency ordinance extending the moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries. Good evening, Chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As you mentioned before you, you have consideration of an interim urgency ordinance extending the moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries. On November 23rd, the council did adopt Ordinance 560, which created an interim urgency ordinance establishing a moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries. Pursuant to the government code, specifically Section 65858, the ordinance is effective for a 45-day period ending January 7th. Normally, we would have brought this back at a subsequent council meeting. Since there is not one before January 7th, it's necessary to bring it back for you for further consideration tonight. Attached to this staff report was the staff report from November 23rd, which explained the federal and state law that was involved, as well as explaining the absence of any city operational or zoning regulations for such dispensaries. Extending the moratorium tonight will take it to a maximum of 10 months and 15 days, which allows staff time to further research the various options that we have. Currently, we have been researching those options, and we've been obtaining information, especially from the state Prop 215 committee that I discussed at the last meeting that was doing research on trying to clean up the Prop 215 quagmire that was created by the initiative. The attached interim ordinance is an extension of the previous ordinance, number 560. It will require a 4/5 vote of the council, as the last ordinance did. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Rick? Okay. Seeing none, this is not a public hearing. I'm sorry, it is a public hearing. if there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9D, would be an opportunity for you to do so. Seeing none, close the public hearing portion and bring this back. Councilmember Costello, why don't you start us here?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Same conditions that were present a couple of weeks ago when we discussed this are present now. I think that extending this out the 10 months and 15 days is a prudent thing to do. Allows staff the time to research the issue more intensely, and the Supreme Court gets the chance to make their ruling, and I guess we can wait for them. I can support this.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Yeah, I also have no problem supporting this and waiting until the Supreme Court rules on it.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, I just want to highlight a couple things in why we're doing this. Is I think the ordinance that we're adopting this evening says it really well, and I think it's good for the public to understand this because I don't want to just jump through this and just automatically rubber stamp it. But I think the issues that I certainly support this evening is that if medical marijuana dispensaries were allowed to be established without appropriate regulation, such uses might be estimated in areas established in areas that would conflict with the requirements of the general plan, be inconsistent with surrounding uses, and or be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare. And if such uses were allowed to proceed, such uses could conflict with and undermine the city's intentions to study and adopt new regulations regarding medical marijuana dispensaries. It's our intent, of course, to allow staff time, direct staff, to study all the aspects of this issue and to develop the legislation to regulate and locate medical marijuana dispensaries in a manner that will minimize the impact of this community. So that's what we're looking at. And I think that's what we're trying to do is to create the appropriate regulations necessary if indeed we have an application to appropriately look at this issue. And so that's I think it's important for both myself and the public to understand what this interim urgency ordinance and moratorium on medical marijuana dispensaries is all about. So with that, I certainly support staff's recommendation and think it's appropriate that we deal with these issues in more detail before we have to deal with them when an application comes before us. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie?
I also don't have any trouble with supporting staff's recommendation here for continuance of the ordinance.
Thank you. I have nothing to add. I support staff's recommendation. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the City Council adopt an interim urgency ordinance of the City of Arroyo Grande extending the moratorium of medical marijuana dispensaries.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That will take us to item 11A, consideration of pre-application 04-018, Hampton Inn and Suites, located at the northwest corner of Camino Mercado and West Branch Street.
Mayor, members of the council, this item is a pre-application involving a proposed Hampton Inn and Suites located on the northwest corner of Camino Mercado and West Branch. The proposed hotel would contain 107 rooms. It would be approximately three-story height along West Branch Street and four-story height as it's depicted on the west side, which is adjacent to the Levitt's upper parking lot. The site plan depicted on the screen also shows a freestanding 6,000-square-foot restaurant at the northwest corner of Camino Mercado and West Branch Street. This is a opportunity for the council to add its comments to those of the Architecture Review Committee and the Planning Commission, which have reviewed preliminary versions which differ from the current proposal. In both instances, the site plans initially submitted involved four-story throughout or three- and five-story facilities, and both bodies suggested that building height was a significant concern. It is suggested that if this application progresses to a formal conditional use permit application, that a model be provided. I believe that the architect and the property owners are both present, and rather than present computer-aided design preliminary drawings that have been produced, I would defer to the architect for a more appropriate presentation of the design concept. What is depicted on the screen is an L-shaped hotel building. I've identified that this site currently has an approved plan development and a conditional use permit for a five-building, one and two, and occasionally split-level office complex that was recently granted a time extension. The owners have bid that project and evaluated the current regional office market and responded to the city's adoption of an economic development strategy, which indicated this as one of seven sites preferred for visitor service facilities, and submitted to the city these evolving proposals of pre-application. I think with that presentation, the staff report contained Architectural Review Committee notes and also Planning Commission draft minutes. I'd note that the pre-application process does not involve a formal environmental determination. There are some potential concerns related to traffic, water, sewer, drainage, all of which would need to be specifically evaluated if and when a project is submitted. Conceptually, it is believed that the signalization of Camino Mercado and West Branch Street, which is pending, and the elimination of a Branch Street driveway
which is a part of the alternative proposal, would likely mitigate anticipated peak hour traffic concerns from the hotel-restaurant combination. I would also note that there are issues in terms of the specific zoning of the property, which has recently changed from PD 1.1, which required a specific site approval process, to an office mixed use. And along with that a change, one of the development standards that changed was building height. The PD zone contains no property development standards and therefore specified no specific building height. Under the office mixed use, the new code provides for a 35-foot building height, which would normally enable a three-story building with the typical roof configurations. It would not fit this particular design concept, in that there is a four-story element and architectural projections well in excess of 35 feet. If this pre-application receives favorable response, we would consider code amendments in the process where we're cleaning up current pending development standards and progressing on into non-residential rather than non-residential districts. And we would suggest that under certain circumstances, such as a city council-approved economic development proposed conditional use permit, that height exceptions or other development exceptions could be considered within the code. That provision is generally discussed in the general plan and encouraged as a concept of density bonuses or other types of waivers that would enable appropriate types of development. Related to the building height, water, there is a pressure zone change or transition in the vicinity on Camino Mercado. So it appears that there would be a solution to the need for appropriate water pressure and flow to a taller than normal building on this particular site through connection to the higher elevation pressure zone if necessary. But this has not been fully evaluated from a technical standpoint. There are also concerns regarding the sewering to the project. A office project has a relatively low sewer demand, whereas a hotel and restaurant of this magnitude would have a relatively high sewer demand. There are plans in progress to replace the lift station number one and increase its capacity, but there are also some downstream deficiencies that would on the southwest side of the freeway that might affect this and other projects. And those infrastructure deficiencies have yet to be fully evaluated. And finally, there are storm drainage issues that hopefully can be resolved on site or using the gravity flow systems available to the site to the northwest or to the Camino Mercado frontage. There is no storm drainage system under West Branch Street until you get close to Oak Park. There would be other environmental impact determinations made at the time of a detailed application. This is a pre-application. It requires no specific action of the council, just direction through discussion. There are several alternatives that are mentioned in staff report for possible ways to address building height concerns expressed by the Architectural Review and Planning Commission. Among those would be a possible roof element, octagonal tower, could be considered for elimination. The building height could be further reduced if that's a concern. There is a fourth level, although it's partially embedded in the ground. That fourth level is the highest element of the building other than the roof, and it contains 19 rooms. There is also possibilities of reducing the size or configuration of the restaurant. Both of those latter alternatives could affect the economic feasibility, and those would be judgments that the applicant would need to make based upon council discussion. If you have any questions of staff, I'd be happy to respond. Otherwise, Robert Tuttle, the architect, Steve Kuhl, and Gary White are in the audience, and I would waive to their further presentation.
I think probably what we'll do at this point is allow the applicant to come forward if you so desire and add to the staff presentation.
Yes, good evening, members of the council. I'm Steve Kuhl, along with Gary White. We're the proposed developers of this site. Mr. Strong is giving you kind of a brief background of the fact that initially we were going to put a professional office complex on the property. Several months ago, when we went to bid on the project, we determined that it was not financially feasible for Mr. White and myself to move forward on that project at that time. And in talking with Rob Strong, he strongly urged us to consider looking into a motel or a hotel development for that site. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank both Rob and also Steve Adams for having spent a lot of quality time with us trying to help put the project together and make something that will work for both the city and for us. At that time, we entered into discussions with an organization called American Property Management Corporation, or what we call APMC, who's a renowned player in the area of motel development and management, not only in California but throughout the western United States. And we've been working with them on the proposed development of the project. And the architect who has been brought in by APMC is Bob Tuttle. And so with that, I'm going to introduce Mr. Tuttle and let him present the project.
Thank you, Steve. And good evening, Mayor and council members and staff. As has been mentioned, the client that I work for is a joint venture between Gary White, Steve Kuhl, and American Properties Management. American Properties Management's main office is located in San Diego, and they own a number of and manage a number of large hotel properties in the western states. Most of them are of the four-star variety, very nice properties. We have been in discussions with Hampton Inn & Suites, which is the Hilton Hotel brand, and we have also shared all of our preliminary design drawings with Hilton, and at this point they are supportive of the project, and have been very helpful in working out some of the changes and modifications that we've worked with as we've gone along through the process. I've had an opportunity to get to know Rob Strong and work with him a little bit. It's been rather refreshing and interesting. I told my fellow architects in the office that it's the first time that the city planner has given me sketches and helped me along with the design, and they really made sense and helped, and I appreciate that. And we've enjoyed working with Rob. We've gone through, I think Rob mentioned, about three alternatives up to this point. The Hampton Inn & Suites product that we've proposed on the site, that consists of 107 rooms. The average daily room rate estimated is around $93. With a 70% occupancy, the projected revenues on a yearly basis is approximately $2.5 million. And I believe the city bed tax is a 10% rate. Is that correct? So in the first full year of operation, estimated revenue generated for the city would be in the neighborhood of $250,000 to $260,000. And as the hotel improves performance over approximately the first 5 years of operations, a city revenue could be anticipated in the neighborhood of $1.38 million. This site has many constraints associated with it. There's the oak trees on the site. It's a sloping site. and we've tried to work with some of these constraints in the design. The earlier office complex, I don't know if all of you can see this, but the office complex is proposed on this property. The way it laid out and so forth required a lot of retaining walls, and there was an access road that came down onto West Branch Street, approximately right here. And we have redesigned the site, trying to simplify it, reduce cost. In the rear of the site, there's a terraced parking lot. There's about four tiers of parking that kind of step down the hill. There would be a sloped retaining wall against the fence that is the fence on the adjoining property for the hotel that's up on the hill. And the corner we have reserved for a restaurant pad, approximately 6,000 square feet. Would like to have a nice restaurant, and the owner at this point needs to reserve that site as a separate parcel. And so we have some limitations as to how close we can place the hotel to the restaurant building and so forth because of the ownership constraints involved in having separate ownership between the restaurant and the hotel property. So ultimately, there would be two parcels there. This rendering depicts a view of the hotel as taken from the off-ramp. In generating the rendering, we took a photograph of the site and then superimposed the building model onto the property, so it in an attempt to reflect the true scale of the building in relationship to its surroundings. You can see the three-story section here along West Branch, and then there's a roof element here that is the four-story section that that faces west behind the Levitt's store. You also see the Levitt's store right here. And this larger elevation on the west side will be partially blocked. If you go to the site and look, you'll see that a large part of that elevation is actually blocked by the trees and the Levitt store as you try to get a vantage point to see it. So the dominant elevation of the building is this West Branch elevation. And you can see in scale to the restaurant, I think it fits fairly nicely into the landscape. There's a small tower on the adjoining hotel. You can see that in the distance there. Just a couple of comments about traffic. There's a pretty big difference in traffic between hotel and office use. The office use is going to have peak hours early morning and then evening at office closing times. The hotel peak hour maximum occupancy actually occurs about 10 o'clock in the evening. And in the morning, the dispersion of the traffic from the site is over a much larger period of time than would typically be, for example, if it were an office use. So even though the total number of cars might be about the same for an office and a hotel use, the hotel traffic occurs largely in times that are off-peak. Beginning early in the morning until, say, 10 or 11 o'clock, the traffic from the hotel will be flowing generally from the site. And then beginning in the afternoon, it'll reach its maximum occupancy around 10 o'clock in the evening with the peak load coming in generally after 7 p.m. So that reduces some of the strain on the traffic during peak hours. I believe that's all I need to say. Are there any questions you'd like to ask?
I have a couple of questions, Mr. Tuttle. Just some general questions. Okay. I'm looking at the rendering that you're showing us at this point, and I'm looking at the slope on Branch. You have it depicted as a landscaped looks like some form of a turf apron that would go slope up to the structure.
Right.
The way in which this elevation strikes me is that there would be quite a bit of grading that would take place, so that the slope is not as drastic as we see it now existing as a vacant lot. And related to that question, I'm looking at the continuation of Camino Mercado. I'm looking at Camino Mercado as it exists across from the freeway off-ramp. And Camino Mercado has a fairly steep grade that exists currently as it moves upward from Branch. And in this drawing, it appears that grade has flattened out considerably. Is it your intent to somehow engineer a gentler slope on El Camino or on Camino Mercado?
No. If the rendering looks that way, it wasn't intended to, but no, there's no change in the street in this Camino Mercado. And we're proposing two entrance drives, one near the top of the property and one partway down. And most of the grading on the site actually consists of cutting into the site. The slope from the sidewalk up to the building, as we are conceiving the design right now, remains largely unchanged. But where the building begins here would be where we begin cutting into the slope to establish the base of the building.
Would there be a retaining wall at all? Along the West Branch frontage?
No, I don't believe we need any retaining along West Branch frontage as we've looked at it preliminarily. We're just anticipating landscaping that slope up to the building. If it needs to be flattened out just a little bit, you know, we would do that. But our preliminary grading schemes don't require any retaining along West Branch or Camino Mercado.
Would the, in your experience in working with the Hampton Inn, would the hotel have a conference facility in it, conference room? And
yes.
If so, typically, how many occupants would it be capable of seating?
I think the current standard Hampton Inn has about 1,200 feet of conference room. That's a combination of two larger conference rooms and a couple of smaller boardrooms. If the client felt that there was a demand for more conference space in this property, we have the room to provide additional conference space. But at this point, they haven't directed me to add any more. But the number of occupants, I think that's probably a couple hundred guests in that neighborhood for 1,200 feet.
Okay. And with the size of the restaurant pad that you're proposing or that the applicant is proposing, typically what kind of restaurant would go in on that pad? What could we expect to see there? You can give examples of
Applebee's.
Yeah. Well, the smaller restaurants are 3,000 to 4,000 feet, and we'd like to get a medium to large size, nicer restaurant there. So we're anticipating about 6,000 square feet.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for the applicant or staff? Councilmember Dickens.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Tuttle, just a real quick clarification. In your introductions, you talked about the TOT and some projections that have at least been estimated at this particular time. Just for clarification purposes, I believe you talked about in the first year of operation, the estimated TOT could be somewhere close to 250 to 260 $1,000 per year. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then you made a comment about in the future that would then possibly increase up to, did you say 1.3 to 1.8?
Yeah, but that's over the first 5 years.
5 years. And what would be the, in your mind, what are the changes? We talk about, you'd mentioned a 70% occupancy rate. Are you talking, in order to get this TOT to increase to those amounts, what's changing in those 5 years?
Well, most hotels have a ramp-up period that takes place over 1 to 2 to 3 years. So after about 5 years, the hotel is usually operating at about its peak or optimum performance. So, you know, it starts a little slow and then builds up. That's why it would vary a little bit. You know, as they acquire more guests or people get to know the hotel and use it more frequently.
Okay. That seems like a significant increase.
Just to clarify, it's a cumulative number you're talking about. You're not talking about producing 1.6.
No. Right, it's cumulative.
In 1 year,
right.
You're talking about 5
cumulative.
Divided by 5.
It's kind of a marginal increase. It's maybe another $50,000. Or something like that.
Okay.
In the fifth year, not.
Thank you.
Not a million.
Thank you. That's what I was wondering. Seemed like a significant jump.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You guys are great operators.
Yeah.
Do you have other questions, Chair?
None at this time.
Any other questions, yes. Clarifications on the staff report?
Just a quick one on, and I know this is not a great depiction of it, but what is the distance off of West Branch there? I get from this drawing that I'm approximately 17 feet is where the base of the building would begin. Is that?
That's probably about right. I don't, without looking at the plan,
the gradation. And do you know what it is then to the very top of the site? What the difference then from Branch to the very top of the site?
I used to know. I don't remember what it is. I think it's on the order of about 50 feet. Does that sound about right to you, Rob? I think from the highest point to the lowest point, it's about 50 feet. The design, this roof element right here is approximately on the top of this fourth story where the roof bears is approximately the same height as this wall of the adjoining neighbor's property. So our building kind of sinks down into the site a considerable distance.
So the top of that roof just projects above the fence, the block wall.
Correct. It'll go above the fence, but it'll primarily be just the roof elements that are actually higher than the fence that's behind it.
Okay. And the other question I had to do with the entrance, I'm not quite understanding. When you're doing the entrance to the hotel from the back side, you're actually entering onto the third floor.
Correct.
And
yes.
Then going down to the front elements.
Right.
I'm assuming then that there are only rooms on the front side because the rooms on the back side would be underground.
Yes. There's primarily rooms on the front side on that lowest level of the west-facing building. But there are also a lot of basement uses down there, the laundry room and some rooms like that that we've tucked down there where they don't require any windows.
And your projection, 70% at $96, is that a typical Hampton Inn operation?
Yeah, that's very typical. It's very conservative. Hotel rates, generally speaking, are on the rise and anticipated to be substantially more than that over the next 3 or 4 years. But that's a pretty conservative number. And Hampton Inn is one of the best performing brands in the country right now, so it's well respected and it's a very good property.
I'll just say, I mean, I'm in the hotel business, and that Hampton Inn is a great operator. I mean, I think without question, probably, but I think your average rate's a bit high. I'll just offhand for this area, because they, even in Pismo with all of the waterfront properties, you're barely breaking $100 when you include them all, according to Smith Travel anyway. So it does seem a little bit high, although there's no question Hampton Inn's a heck of an operator.
I'm not the expert on the numbers, but I got them from our management company, so.
Were those all your questions for now, Jim? Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Is there a reason that the hotel could not extend towards the Premier property, basically going behind the pool if needed? Because I'm just looking at the grading plan as what we do have, and because the hotel is stepping up the property, it would seem to me that there might be the potential, if we needed to take some height out of the building in the front side to possibly put it, and we were still looking at keeping a certain number of rooms. Is there a physical constraint that I'm missing looking at the plans? Because we don't have a detailed grading right now.
Yeah, not really. But what happens is that when we push the building up there, then the pool has to go somewhere, then we lose parking spaces. I mean, we could push the building up the hill further, but then we'd use up some real estate, and just pushing one thing changes another.
Okay. Actually, I was looking at it. You'd probably lose about 3 parking spaces is what I kind of calculated out, and depending if it was two-sided or single-sided there and playing with the pool, you might still be able to keep the pool in the same spot. And so I'm throwing out ideas right now, because one of the concerns that I have is when I look at your drawing, there's a lot of faded colors there, and it's very soft, and I'm not sure there's probably anybody here that doesn't look at that and say that would be wonderful if that's what it looked like when it was all said and done. My concern is that paints tend to be very harsh when they're not faux'd. If it's a lace-type stucco versus maybe a Santa Fe hand-troweled finish, it would have a totally different feel. And I, as a kind of a reference, went out to all the Hamptons that I could kind of look on the West Coast today as far as on the Internet and was looking at their styles. One, it was one of the interesting things is that I didn't find a repeating style, because we've actually kind of heard that the roof element and such is what Hampton Inn wants to include. And with the exception of the Camarillo property, I didn't find that tower element repeat anywhere else.
No, I think the Camarillo property is the only other Spanish style Hampton that I'm aware of. Most of them are the more modern, boxy looking building that you see everywhere.
But you would agree there's also there is a lot of different looks. I mean, you wouldn't look and say like a McDonald's where they're all going to pretty much look the same. There is still a pretty – and the other thing that we've obviously heard about the restaurant, and there's pros and cons to the restaurant, but actually, once again, an informal sampling I was surprised at the number of actual hotel sites, Hampton sites, that did not actually have an adjacent restaurant that they refer to in the vicinity but not actually on the property. And in the vicinity doesn't generally imply to me next door. So I realize, once again, that we're trying to make this work, and I'm a very big proponent of this, but these are just little observations I was making. So I think the rest is probably going to drag more into comments. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any other questions?
I have one additional question. Do you know the square footage of the hotel? I mean, everything included? The 1,200...
I can dig that out for you. It's on the plan there, but I don't remember what it is.
On this plan? I only saw the restaurant and the number of rooms. I didn't see total square footage of the building. The restaurant's...
My apology. I don't have that number with me.
Do you know roughly? I mean, I've roughed it out at 500 square feet. I mean...
It's probably in the neighborhood of... 70,000 square feet total, might be 75. I think that's about how big it is.
Thank you. It gives me an idea.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I just had one other question.
Sure.
Mr. Tuttle, in regards to kind of a follow-up on Councilmember Arnold's question about the restaurant. What is the relationship with this particular proposal with the hotel and the restaurant? It looks like they're going to be two separate projects, probably two totally different owners when it's all said and done. And in relationship to making this project fly, how important, I guess, is that? Maybe that's a question maybe for the owners more so than you, but I think it's important for us to know as we look at this particular pre-application, we're really looking at actually two different things. The restaurant, which will most likely come down the pike, further down the road in regards to its design. We're not really talking about that this evening. Right. And then the hotel.
No help from the back. They will be two independent operators. The way they've structured the property, they would like to be able to either lease or sell that property to a selected restaurant operator. The hotel does not want to own and manage a restaurant, basically, but they are... one supports the other. They're good for each other on this property. Certainly, Hilton would like to see it there, and most restaurant owners would like to be at this location. This is not a full-service hotel. They provide breakfast, but that's it. So the conference facilities often, with an adjoining restaurant, they'll make a deal, and the restaurant will do business by providing food for conferences and meetings and, you know, catering to the rooms and that sort of thing. But it would be two separate owners.
Okay. Again, we're asking questions and clarifying the staff report and the applicant's presentation, recognizing that we'll have an opportunity to make formal statements and formal observations. At this point, are there any other members of the audience that would like to make comments on this agenda item? Okay, seeing none, then why don't we see if we can't offer some specific guidance and observations based on what we've heard thus far. And Councilmember Arnold, why don't you start us off here?
Okay, I'd like to start off by saying that I am definitely a proponent of a hotel on this site. I don't want to have my remarks that follow imply anything less than that. But one of the things that we were told specifically at Planning Commission was the size of the hotel had to be around 100 units or it wasn't feasible. And I'm not quite sure where that's coming from. Like I say, in my informal survey today when I was just trying to look at what was offered by Hampton Inns, the San Clemente unit hotel had 69 suites and no restaurant. The San Jose had 80 rooms. A lot of them actually was very difficult to assess the number of rooms. The one thing I was determining was that there were no restaurants adjacent, and this was through Expedia. Once again, this wasn't something that was determined at the actual Hilton site. They didn't tell you. But so with that said, I think there would at least appear on the surface to be some opportunities for possibly some movement as far as design goes. The other thing that was very obvious was that there is no standard hotel that Hampton Inn is offering up as this is their cookie cutter. They may have preferences, I'm sure, but it seems that the hotels are built to suit the sites or to suit the needs of the community. So this is obviously a very prominent, important corner for us. And while I do not want to squander the opportunity to have a hotel there, and I would love to see Hampton there, I also don't want to have regrets when it's built. And I think that what that really is going to do is require that if we're going to make trade-offs in the height and the size, that the architecture needs to do everything possible to mitigate the size. One of the things that I did see in some of the hotels that I was able to find photos of where they used kind of the trellis that's actually on the the cover sheet here, where there's a small section of it on the West Branch Street, but it's only a small portion of it. If that was used more extensively on the lower level, that would help to break up some of the mass. One of the other examples that I saw were they used some faux balconies, individual balconies on some of the higher rooms to also break up the mass. One of the things that I noticed in the drawing that wasn't real obvious on the plans is obviously with the stepping of the building back and forth, that also helps to break it up. So I think it's real important that we do everything we can to get a quality building here, and that we don't just say for a few bucks that it's worth cutting the corners. And that may mean a higher quality roof. It might mean a better stucco. It might mean a softer type of paint. These are the architectural aesthetic issues. Then beyond that, I definitely have a concern about the water use at a hotel will use, and the sewer issues right now. And I think these are things that city staff has to really look at harder and determine the actual feasibility of this project. But with that said, I started off saying I was very pro-hotel still, because I didn't want this to sound. I would love to see this here. I just really want to make sure that when we're all done, everybody's happy when it's built. Thank you.
Councilmember Costello.
I'd also like to see a hotel at this location. I think it's an ideal spot in the city, and it's going to be an excellent location to have a hotel. I've got some concerns about what I see before me. If the illustration we had today was what the final product looked like, I'd be very happy with that. However, I want to see it in terms of what a model looks like. I'm a little concerned about that fourth story on the back or the side, and that's something that's going to be an issue. Size matters here. Scope, massing, scale, and how it fits on that hillside are going to be critical issues. I think the traffic, water, sewer issues are all going to come up, and we're going to go through those with staff. And if they're not solved, then we're not going to have a project. I mean, that goes without saying. So I think we'll address those when the time comes. But I think that something is going to be critical. We'll be making certain that the final building we see is truly the right scale, the right size. I'm not sure. I know the mayor was talking about the slope of Camino Mercado as it comes down to Meat Branch. And going from memory, it does seem a little bit more severe than what I saw on the diagram. So I'm going to have to look. We're going to have to look at that carefully. Also, I think a model is going to be useful a little bit later on in terms of this, particularly in light of the streetscape, the adjacent buildings with Levitt's, and then the existing hotel to the rear. So in general, I like what I see, but I'm a little bit skeptical that that's what the final project will look like. And I do think we do need to be careful, and I'll echo what Mr. Arnold says. We want something that we're all going to be happy with at the end, and there'll be no regrets. So let's go forward carefully.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A hotel serving kind of establishment at this particular site is something I supported when this issue came before the city, and I think that this is certainly an appropriate location for looking at the possibility of doing that type of land use. So I think that's important for the applicant to know that I certainly support the idea of a particular hotel establishment here. A couple of things that I'm going to be looking at as this project comes forward is, and I'll just go down my list here, is staff talked about the sewer deficiencies. We have some in the deficiencies are certainly within this land use, but also down line. And I don't know whether this particular sewer system goes into our Fair Oaks or our Bakeman Lane, but both of those are going to need some significant attention in the next 5 years. Traffic will be something that we're going to certainly have to explore specifically, and I would agree with Mr. Tuttle in regards to the disbursement of hotel use, but unfortunately, this particular area doesn't function in a peak hour situation. It functions because based on Walmart, and it based in that particular it's not easy just to say that, you know, it's not the the peak hour traffic from people coming and going from work. It's people coming and going from shopping. And that this particular area is certainly from a roadway segment is not sufficient. I would really like to see a 3D model come forth, and that 3D model, in my opinion, needs to depict the orientation in relation to the adjacent properties and their existing buildings. I think it's certainly the rendering that you showed us this evening looks nice, but a 3D model is really going to help me kind of understand in relationship to this particular proposal and as it relates to Levitt's, as it relates to getting off the freeway, as it relates to the Premier Inns up above and those types of things, and making sure that we have something that's going to be congenial. The things that really strike me right offhand are certainly the height, and I think you've heard that over and over from the different committees, so that's nothing new. I think that we're really going to be I think we're going to be we're pushing the limits in regards to height on what's being proposed before us this evening. As I look at this this particular proposal in relationships to West Branch Street, first of all, we have a height elevation of it looks like about I want to say anywhere between 10 to 18 feet from roadway just up to the baseline, and that's the contour of the slope. And then from there, we have about a 35 feet of building. And so we're talking about almost, if I do my math correctly, over 50 feet smacking you in the face as you get off the freeway. And I think that's going to be very intrusive. And so that's my first area that I think that personally, I don't see three stories there. I see two stories max. In regards to the four stories that's being depicted on the whatever side that is, I guess that would be the west-facing side, I see that as being too massive, and I don't think it's going to work. Again, if you can show me otherwise, I think from my first observation, the height, and it really has to do with more of the impact and its scale. The proposed scale is going to just really be, I think, way out of league with the surrounding area. So I think in order to compensate for that, I would certainly suggest and encourage a reconfiguration, if at all possible, moving some of the hotel around the pool. I like the pool location, certainly, and it may mean a reduction in certainly the amount of rooms that are going to be available. And I know that's a balance that you guys have to work out in regards to its feasibility and so forth. I'd also suggest that, you know, if we have to do a reconfiguration, that we look at the restaurant site. You know, that's obviously something you guys will have to work on. I like the restaurant, but I think that it's a secondary use in regards to the plan in this particular area, or at least the land use that I think would be appropriate. It's not necessary that the restaurant be 6,000 square feet. That could be looked at as well as far as reconfiguring. But those are some of the areas. I think the architecture, that's really not my area of expertise. I'm not a big person in regards to tile roofing. But that's just me. Everyone else has a different opinion about architecture. I think there's other people that are going to have better input on that particular aspect. In regards to maybe helping reduce the massing, definitely step backs and terraces are something that certainly would probably add to some dimensions that would take away from the overall mass. But at this point, I think we've got a fairly large building, and it's going to be difficult to move forward without some reconfiguring. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, similar comments on the mass. I think you'll remember when we considered the original office building at 26,000 square feet, there was some concerns about mass and scale there, and here we're talking about literally three times as much mass here. The plus side of that is, of course, that it sits much farther down on the lot, which means that it might be doable. I think reducing certainly four stories is going to be difficult to make work there. Even three stories sitting 17 feet off of branch, I would consider looking at cutting back in farther and doing something similar to what you were planning on the other side. With the front floor, if you want to call it that, set down farther so that you could then step the other buildings back, reduce the impact directly on branch. The actual visual that I'd be most concerned about is actually coming south on the freeway and looking at it from that standpoint. That's actually where it's tallest. It's also where it's also the gateway to Arroyo Grande. That's the opening shot there. So that particular piece of it at four stories would also be very difficult to deal with. So being able to redistribute the rooms or maybe reduce the number of rooms, frankly, over onto the restaurant site, I think has possibilities. I think a good example, if you look at the Mid-State Bank building next door, granted it is only two stories, but it does go essentially lot line to lot line. But because it doesn't break the bluff line behind it and because it is painted the right color, it disappears really quite well into the hillside there. So I think looking at that as possibly a guide of how it might be doable would certainly be worthwhile. My gut feeling is there's just too many units on too small a lot to really fit in that location, particularly on a lot that has that much prominence in our community and that much prominence physically as being on that bluff. So maybe fewer units, but certainly if the same number of units, I just don't think you've got room for the restaurant. The other possibility would be you consider to build it without the restaurant with the idea that you might later break out a piece of the upper parking lot as a smaller restaurant pad. Might be some way to consider phasing it since the restaurant would disappear there completely. I think on the traffic issue, as far as directly related, that's, I think Councilman Dickens pointed out that it isn't just a straight commute traffic in this area. There's a study that would have to be done that would have to show how it works on Saturday afternoon as well as Monday morning. And I have some concern about the parking, that the 80% overlap in the parking is really a pretty big stretch here. If you were talking about a really successful commercial restaurant that's going to do business after 7 o'clock when, in fact, the hotel is starting to be – their parking lot is starting to be full at that point. So there would be – I think you probably have difficulty finding a tenant willing to deal with that potential risk of having no parking because there's no alternative in this area. There's about two street parking spaces. Again, there might be some sort of ultimately shared parking arrangement even with the hotel up above. So at those sites, again, all of the issues that have to do with whether it's adequate water or adequate sewer are just issues that certainly have to be determined whether that's possible to do or not. So I think there's a lot of yellow lights here, but I certainly having a hotel, particularly maybe a smaller hotel on this site, would certainly be desirable and worth working through to make it work out. Those are my comments.
Thank you. I think my observations are similar to what you've already heard. I think the hesitancy and some of the skepticism with regard to the architectural rendering are based experientially with this council. The long and short of it is we've been burned before. So I think the recommendation that Councilmember Dickens made about, and I think others have supported, the creation of a dimensional model would help. I think if we also look at the comments that Councilmember Guthrie made with regard to the visual impact as you're moving south on 101, recognizing that there is going to be a cut into the slope, it would be nice if we could see the posture of this building as it relates to Levitt's. In other words, as you're going south on the freeway, how much of the elevation would in fact be blocked by the natural elevation of Levitt's? If we can see that, then perhaps the visual impact won't be as great as it appears now when we're simply looking at this building in and of itself. So, but the other general observation I have, I think, deals with a couple of words that some of the members of council have heard me use before, and they were new words that I learned when I built my first home a few blocks away from where this site is in Rancho Grande, and going through the architectural review, the panel, which consisted of a structural engineer and other residents in the area, introduced me to two terms that I'd never heard before. One was a term called horizontality, and the other was a term called verticality. And the manner in which these two terms related to one another was something like this. I want to see less verticality and more horizontality. And that was what was imposed on us. And I guess if we were to sort of use that anecdote as it applies to this site, this is clearly a challenging site. And there's no question about it, simply because of the height of the lot itself and the degree of grading that it's going to take to engage in a project like this. But I would join the comments that have already been offered in that, we have to figure out a way to put this project in scale. And if that is a reduction of the units, fine. If it is a reduction of the size of the restaurant, whatever it takes, as long as it can work, and I don't know if we're going to get there or not. I would love to see this project move forward in some configuration that would be palatable. I'd love to see a restaurant there. We don't have enough decent restaurants in town. We have some, but not enough. We certainly, based on the action that we took several meetings ago in defining and identifying potential hotel sites in the city, there's a void of that service as well for the city. So we desperately need additional lodging. I like the fact that we could finally host some form of official conference in the city, which presently we cannot. We don't have adequate conference facilities attached to lodging, so this would be a plus. With regard to some of the specific architectural issues, we don't have to look too far. Councilmember Arnold brought up the varying architectural styles. I've been at the Hampton Inn Camarillo. And also, we can look in North County at the Hampton Inn that you have in Paso on West 46. I believe that's a Hampton Inn. Two contrasting styles of architecture, tremendous contrast in styles. One is a box, modern. The other is Mediterranean. And I think what we're going to find here in Arroyo Grande is some form of architecture that tends toward Mediterranean. We're going to want something that looks something like what we see in Five City Center, I suspect. Based on that, when you're coming off the freeway onto West Branch, the last thing any of us want to look at is a non-dimensional massive wall. That was one of the issues that I had when we were talking about retaining walls going in there on the office building. I think it's been pointed out with not a lot of expense and some creativity, we can put dimension using architectural materials that are not that expensive we can put some accents on that wall that will help to soften it. So I think we have to be mindful of several things as this project moves forward. Certainly the environmental issues are going to loom large. Circulation is going to be an issue. Water is going to be an issue. But those are things that we're not here to debate this evening. We're simply here to offer our opinions on the presentation of the project itself. I think the two words that or the two terms that I would offer in the way of guidance here would be the scale of the project and its accompanying intensity of use. Those two issues are, from what I understand from the comments made by the rest of the council, are going to continue to be. Okay. Anything else that anyone wants to add?
I would like to add one thing. And it seems like part of the balance to reach the number of rooms that we seem to be looking at is the parking. And I wonder if is it at all feasible, possible to do multi-level parking? Maybe have two levels of parking on that. Just something to consider. It might allow you to spread the hotel out a little bit more. Shorter hotel, be less verticality, more horizontality, and still have the rooms.
You just picked right up on those terms, didn't you?
Again, I don't know if it's it's feasible. What that does to the project is just something to consider.
Okay. Is that all you need from us right now, Rob?
It is. If the applicant and architect could stay briefly after the meeting, Steve and I would like to confer a little further, but that's definitely the purpose of a pre-application is the discussion you've had.
Okay. Very good. At this time, council is going to take a brief 10-minute recess, and then we will reconvene at roughly 5 minutes to the hour.
Do you want the...
Okay, council is back in session. Takes us to item 11B, consideration of selection of Councilmember Costello as the mayor pro tem. Ready, Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. At the first meeting in December is normally the time in which the council selects the new mayor pro tem. 2 years ago, the council established a new policy which specifies a rotation of the mayor pro tem each year based on seniority for those members that have not yet served as the mayor pro tem. And so based on that criteria, we determined that Councilmember Costello is next in line for that position and have recommended, consistent with the policy in place, that the council go ahead, proceed to appoint Councilmember Costello as mayor pro tem for the upcoming year.
Okay. Are there any questions in the staff report? Okay. Any member of the public that would like to comment on 11B? It's not a public hearing, but we'll give you an opportunity to do so anyway. Okay. Seeing none, close that. This seems to be fairly straightforward. This is going to be easy. What's going to be difficult is a year from now, and I'm not sure how we'll do that. Maybe flip a coin. But at any rate, any further comment on this item? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to appoint Costello member or council member.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make it easy. Since he has two more years of seniority on the Planning Commission, I think that would be the next way to go.
Well, I was going to mention that, and I'm glad you did, Ed, because I think maybe an additional criteria might well be seniority in city service on a prior commission or board. So we just extend the seniority beyond that of time served on the council. And maybe that's a secondary criteria, and if that's palatable. But, you know, we can cross that road when we come to it, but certainly not an issue for today's agenda, but just a thought.
Just as long as we don't draw cards for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That takes us to 11C, consideration of appointment of council members to various regional boards, commissions, and committees.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Also at this first meeting in December, it's normal practice for the city council to make appointments amongst yourselves to a long list of regional boards, commissions, and committees that council members take a seat on and represent the city in these agencies. And what we have done is in the chart we've provided you, we've listed those members that the current city council members and their current appointments. Therefore, we've identified initial vacancies. However, the other appointments and organizations, too, you may want to discuss changes and reappointments. That's all up to the council's prerogative. So
with okay,
that, I'll turn
good.
It over to you to handle that, Mr. Mayor.
All right. We're going to take this one at a time and see if we can get this finished in short order. For the new members, Councilmember Guthrie and Arnold, if you have any questions as we go through these as to the purpose of the particular organization, feel free. And particularly if the majority want to volunteer you for one, you might have some questions about that. So. Okay. South County Area Transit, SCAT. Councilmember Dickens is the alternate. And Jim, I believe you indicated that you had a desire to be the primary on that.
Well, one of my problems is with my work schedule at Roy Graney High School, it really doesn't afford me the ability to leave during the day, so it kind of limits my ability to serve, and that's one of the areas I've served in the past and would like to continue to do that, although Jim Guthrie's also has been a part of that as well. Whether he wants to be an alternative, we can kind of discuss that. Because of some of the other things I need to do, I'm going to be a little thin with maybe some of my responsibilities on this council. And I'm having a hard time filling in because of some of the time commitments that these boards require. So that was an area that I'd like to serve on, but I'd kind of like to open that up if there's a.
Well, how about if we do this? Since the SCAT board is a fairly energetic board, and it is a critical topic. Why don't we do this at least for the coming year? Let's look at perhaps Jim as the primary or Jim Dickens as the primary and Jim as the alternate, and you can, you know, you're free to attend the board meetings and sort of get a sense of what goes on there. And you may well get stuck with an afternoon appointment or something and can't go. Mm-hmm. So you're liable to be a very active alternate. Would that be amenable?
I'll work with whatever, that's fine with me.
Okay, so we're going to say Councilmember Dickens for now for our SCAT as the primary, Councilmember Guthrie as the alternate. With regard to SLOCOG, I would like to remain as the primary on SLOCOG for a number of different reasons, if the council is okay with that. Yeah. Anybody have any issues?
I wouldn't mind staying alternative. I think in the last year, I think I've maybe gone twice for you, but that would be fine.
Okay. City Selection Committee, that is generally the mayor on that committee at any anyway. So that selection committee meets once a year. So it's not really that big of a deal. However, if I cannot make it, it is typically the mayor pro tem that goes. So can I put you in there, Jim?
Sure, certainly.
So it'll be Councilmember Costello is the alternate. South County San, I'm listed as the primary. I would like to continue as the primary.
Requires that.
Any issues? And then how do you feel about continuing as the alternate for that or
that's,
not?
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, then Councilmember Dickens will remain as the alternate. Just a quick bit of history on this. Jim has been pretty much attending on a regular basis. So I'm going to start going to that meeting on a regular basis. IWMA, my preference would be not to continue as the primary. Do we have any, and I should indicate to you that the IWMA is a great organization. It's got a tremendous executive officer, Bill Worrell. Primary focus is on management of the landfills and recycling countywide and the city program as well. We've made some great strides. We're moving in the right direction. We're sort of in a maintenance mode right now. That board meets every other month at 1:30, second Wednesday. It's a good...
I'm interested in that.
Okay. Anyone have an issue with... Excuse me. Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Jim, did you want to remain an alternative on that? If not, I'd be happy to do that. If not,
I have either no. I don't have any desire or any inkling. I mean, if someone else wants to step up there and be an alternate, that would be fine. I think I've only attended maybe two RAC meetings in the last, two Zone 3 meetings in the last 6 years, because Tom Reynolds has been so consistent there. So I don't have a big tie in there.
Okay. So Mayor Pro Tem is the primary. Councilmember Arnold is the alternate. We've sort of put Zone 3 and the RAC together with the same person for continuity's sake. Is that okay?
Yes, I'd be happy with that.
Okay, so we're going to have the what about the alternate? Keep the same.
Just a clarification. Am I allowed to attend those meetings even if Joe is going? There's no problem with that? Just
sure.
To be up to speed? Okay.
Well, I have to be honest. When I thought of the EVC, I immediately thought of Jim Guthrie. But that's not to say that you have to do this. So it's... Would you be okay with that, Jim?
Sure, I can do that.
Okay.
Alternate?
Yeah, the alternate for the EBC, it's presently Joe. What do you want to do there?
Well, I can stay as the alternate on that. Or if somebody else wants to step up to that... No preference either way.
Okay. Well, why don't you stay in there for now? Okay. And then we have the APCD. Joe, you're presently the primary. We have no alternate designated.
I don't think we're allowed to have an alternate on this one, as I recall. I think we went through this last year, or the first year I was appointed to this, that we only get the primary, and that's it.
Okay.
I have no objection to staying on that.
Pretty much it? Does that how you recall it? South County Youth Coalition.
Yeah, I can certainly continue to do that. There is a revision there. Actually, it meets at I believe it's every fourth Thursday. It's at 3:30, and it's no longer at Ramona Gardens. It's actually here on Bridge Street at the SAFE office.
If no one else, I'd like to be the alternative on that.
Okay. All right, so Councilmember Dickens is the primary.
We staff alternates in case the board representative does not want to attend. I think Karen Sisko has attended both of them. I haven't been down to one myself. It's great if the board member wants to attend, but we do have alternates that can make it if you're not available.
Okay, well, we have a volunteer, so who's willing to go to La Palma. So that's great. Councilmember Arnold. I believe that's it. We have to do this by motion, or are we good to go? Okay. We have completed the appointments of council members to various regional boards and commissions. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. That takes us to item number 12, city council member items. We have none this evening. Item 13, city manager items. Anything? Steve?
No, sir.
No reminder about the holiday party on the 17th?
Actually, I was going to do that under council or city manager communications.
Okay. All right. Council communications, any correspondence, comments? None? Okay. Staff communications?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I did want to remind everybody that the city council is all invited to our annual holiday party, employee party at the Women's Club from 11:30 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. on Friday, the 17th. And it's usually a lot of fun, and the employees really appreciate, if you can make it, the employees really appreciate seeing you there.
Yeah, just to kind of tag on to that for the benefit of our new council members, traditionally the council mans the serving line for the rest of the employees. So we have aprons with your names on them.
I was already planning to be in there.
That takes us to item 16, community comments and suggestions, opportunity for anyone to come forward and comment on anything that they would like, as long as it's 3 minutes or less.
Good evening and happy holidays. My name is Kerry Boyle. I live at 881 Turquoise Drive, and I'm here in regards to the Valley Gardens paving project, and I guess you had an agenda item earlier, the consent agenda item 8J. Anyway, I bring a card from a lot of the residents out there. We couldn't find one big enough to accommodate everybody, but and actually we couldn't find a thank you card, so we had to have one that says lots and lots and lots and lots of love and even more love. So there's a lot of real nice, kind thoughts in here. The people out there are very appreciative of what you did. And I think they kind of perceive the council as Santa Claus, although we know it's a little more difficult than that when you try to coordinate budget and planning and resources. So we're just all tickled pink with the quality of the work that was done out there, and it really means a lot to everybody out there. So we thought you deserved it.
Wanted to comment on consent agenda item 8M. It's the engineering for housing and Grand. The signalization. As you all know, when Briscoe interchange gets redone, reconfigured, that it's a good possibility in the way the design looks that northbound on House End will have to turn on Grand and go back to 101 to get onto 101, which will be the new traffic pattern. And so I just wanted to make sure that in this thing that we just don't put in a new traffic signal, that we reconfigure that interchange or that intersection to meet the future of what the traffic is going to generate downstream. So, and one of the big things there is going to be acquiring property from Union 76 to increase that radius. Trucks right now have a hard time getting around it, and if we're going to do it, we need to do it right. If we don't have the money to do it right, the signal is antiquated and needs replacing. But I'd rather see us acquire the property and do it right, because it is moving traffic right now at a halfway decent configuration. So let's spend the money and make this intersection configured so that it matches what we're going to do downstream. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Steve Matthews, CEO, AGP Video, Inc. First of all, since it's my first trip to the mic since the election, I'd like to welcome and congratulate the new members of council. And since you guys just moved right along with the renewal of our contract and consent on AG8G this evening, I'm so tired. I apologize. I didn't get a chance to get up here and let you know that a number of things that we've already set in motion with regards to putting your new system together. About a year ago, we put the hard drive system on, which is why you're getting a lot clearer, crisper picture on playbacks. And that also affords us the opportunity to provide the city with DVD copies. This is the first 6 months, January through June, of all the city council meetings on DVD. They'll be on file with the city clerk. The last 6 months, we're going to make available next week. We do it on a revolving system, which is why they're in six-month groups. We'll try and speed that up. Once the system is in-house, we'll be able to do it on a more regular rollover. As a result of that, we haven't got council's Christmas presents, but with DVDs are coming forward for of the the changeover for the incoming and outgoing council members. We're just going to be able to put that together this week. So I'd like to thank staff for approving the renewal on our contract and council. And Merry Christmas to and happy holidays to the entire community.